Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the images are shocking. A massive wall of water coming down a mountain and crashing into communities in Nepal. Over 1,000 died, thousands more are missing. The disaster was caused by a glacier collapse triggered by, at least in part two, global warming. Could a warming planet bring about more similar catastrophes? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. At 8:37 in the morning on August 26th, a wall of ice the size of a small mountain collapsed. It broke from one of the great peaks of the Nepalese Himalayas. In the next few seconds, it fell 1,200 meters straight down into a river valley. By the time it stopped moving, more than 1,000 people were dead, thousands more remained missing, and a valley that had existed for generations with its bridges, its hydropower stations, its temples, and its homes were destroyed. How did this happen? Could it happen again, here and in other parts of the world? And can we forecast such disasters and prepare? Marianne Karplus is with us, a professor of Earth, Environment, and Resource Sciences at the University of Texas at El Paso. Karplus is a seismologist and a geophysicist researching the structure and tectonics of Earth's lithosphere. She has conducted research on glaciers, tectonics, and high mountain hazards in the Himalayas, the Tibetan Plateau, for almost 20 years. And Dr. Marianne Karplus, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, David.
How unusual was this event on August 26th?
So the event on August 26th was very unusual in the sense that it was just an enormous amount of rock and glacial ice that came down in the basically a giant landslide and glacier collapse. And it, you know, some of the initial estimates suggest that it could have been more than 200 million cubic meters of rock and ice that collapsed. And the scale of that is just mind-blowing. And it's a very unusual event that so much rock and ice would collapse.
So when we think about things in human time, but also in geology time, I guess these things happen frequently, but you have to think about, okay, in human time, having something like that happen is rare?
It is. Just for context, so you can look at the geologic record in the valley where this occurred, and you can see, for example, some very large boulders that were moved by a previous flood event. That's what's been interpreted in the from studying those boulders. And seems like the last time that boulders of the size that we saw moving in the water flow in this recent flood, it may have been 5,000 years ago or more than 5,000 years ago that that could have happened in the past. And so, as you mentioned, in the geologic timescale, there are, you know, the Himalayan mountains are subject to erosion. They're highest mountains in the world, and they undergo erosion and glacial collapse, but this event seems to have been the largest flood in that valley for the last 5,000 years, according to initial studies.
Were there warning signs that anyone could have picked up on, was there any idea this could happen?
So it's a well-known hazard in the Himalaya, especially now with the observations of increased temperatures in the Himalaya. And glaciers have been melting at increased rates, and the temperatures have been recorded to be higher than, you know, in recent human timescales. And so it's a big concern for scientists in the Himalaya and those who are working in that region. And that can cause it can cause things like glacial outburst flooding, glaciers to be receding. Those are things that have been that are sort of carefully monitored within Nepal and other parts of the Himalaya. But it's still difficult to know exactly when something might occur, and the scale of this event was rather shocking in its extent, as you pointed out in the introduction. And it's certainly I think this event has brought a lot of attention to these types of processes and to the susceptibility of this region to those kinds of hazards.
But we can say, oh, we see that hanging glacier. Eventually that thing is going to collapse. But we don't know when. It could be thousands of years into the future. But with the warming of the planet, we're getting the idea this could happen sooner than later. But there's nothing we can do for like other communities, other parts of the world, saying you need to get out. There could be a cascade failure of the glacier, and you need to evacuate. There's nothing we can do to kind of predict it in a practical terms.
So there are ways that we can monitor it. And so for example, there's many scientists working in Nepal and other parts of the Himalaya, as well as international scientists that are collaborating with them to look at changes to the Himalaya. One way you can look at that is with scientific monitoring on the ground. So monitoring things like temperatures, looking at mapping out the glaciers and the glacial lakes. What is the size? What is the extent? What is the depth of those systems? And then you can also use satellite data. So actually some of the preliminary work that's been done with satellite data suggests that you could see this particular rock face and glacier actually moving, like experiencing increased motion in the months before this happened. And so I think it's a challenging problem because you can have increased glacial and slope movement, and then that may or may not lead to a glacial collapse and a landslide like we saw in this case. But there are things we can do to monitor those. And once the landslide starts to break away or starts to weaken, you can also see signals, for example, from seismometers that we use to record earthquakes. And so you can potentially identify areas of concern based on both satellite imagery as well as potentially seismic data suggesting that you might start to have a landslide breaking off of a slope, for example.
But this happened so quickly. I mean, having sirens and like we have for tsunamis and things, that's not really a practical way to try to address this.
So it is practical in the sense that so there are actually many valleys in the Himalaya that have siren warning systems for floods, and they often work well in the sense that the systems that I'm aware of in Nepal and also several river valleys in the country of Bhutan, also in the Himalaya, they have warning systems where they have water level sensors in the river. And if you see the water level go up, for example, in a flood event, it can send a warning downstream. And often that means today text messages to cell phones, as well as in some areas, they might have a siren that indicates a flood is coming. The challenge in this particular event was that actually the first two water level stations were completely destroyed by the force of the flood before the warning could be sent and before they even registered an increase in the water level. And so it's a challenge of having a mix of different types of sensors potentially that could provide the warning in the case where you have a very fast moving destructive mud flow, as in this case. It basically destroyed the first two water level sensors, and then one of the sensors later downstream recorded 9 meters of water level increase in less than 30 minutes. And so some of the sensors that worked recorded just these enormous increase in water level, but the sensors that were destroyed by the flood, unfortunately, no one knew that there was a flood from the data from those sensors because they were destroyed. But you asked about
I got to hit this break. When I come back from the break, I'm going to talk to you more about the warming temperatures, climate change. The number is 833-877-8255. If you've got a question or a comment about this glacial catastrophe, we'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half hour, we're going to be talking about young adults, social media, and mental health. But right now, we're finding out more about the recent disaster that happened in Nepal with the collapse of a glacier, how it caused this enormous rapid flood of debris flow and just killed over 1,000 people, thousands more missing. And the images are just startling. As you see it, it's just hard to believe that that is real. And we're speaking with Marianne Karplus, a professor of Earth, Environmental, and Resource Sciences at the University of Texas at El Paso, and she studies this. So we've talked about warming temperatures. There was charting of the warming temperatures. So what evidence suggests that climate change may have contributed to this collapse?
So it's well documented in the Himalaya that glaciers are growing smaller, so they're retreating. Glaciers are melting increasingly rapidly, and as well the frozen, so the temperature of the ground is also higher, so the permafrost is able to melt more than it used to. And so you have the warming temperatures that have been well documented, they cause the ground in the high mountains, potentially if it has been in the past permafrost, basically frozen ground, it can become less stable. You can also get ice melting out of the ground in, for example, in moraines. There's sort of piles of material deposited by glaciers that often have ice in the middle, unless it melts. And then if it melts, that pile of debris could become less stable. So you have, those are just a few different processes in the high Himalaya that could lead both the land as well as the glaciers themselves to be somewhat less stable as a response to warming temperatures. And it's difficult to say with any particular event whether or not, I think it's too soon to say specifically that this event was triggered by changes in climate, but we can start to put together the data to piece together the story of what happened. And the data suggests the temperatures were high, the slopes were less stable than they were previously, and this is an area where there's been well-documented glacial retreat.
So, I mean, that's the way you're a scientist, and scientists have to look at these things and you say, well, it's not just climate change, it could have been all these other things, but it has been warming. The planet has been warming. The thawing of the permafrost, which basically held the mountain together as a glue, started falling apart. And the weathering of what was holding the mountain together was active, more active than it had been for thousands of years. I know as a scientist, you just can't say, we know this one thing. The causality is always, you want to be able to demonstrate that. But I don't see how we can sort of dilute the idea that climate change is not the reason why this happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. So it is very important to put together the story as best we understand it, and it seems like there's a strong link in this case. I mean, there's been extensive documentation, from the science of this of increased temperatures, increased warming, permafrost melt, glacial melt in this area. In this particular glacier, since you had a large glacier on top of a slope that failed. You can also, the temperatures in the days leading up to this happening probably was causing would have been causing increased melt of that glacier. And then you have water infiltrating down into the rock. That can also cause weakness in the rock if you have increased water that's sort of percolating down into cracks and things like that. So a number of those processes seem to be, where you have the strong link between the increased temperatures and this event happening.
Yeah, and the reason why I think it's important that we try to, highlight the issue of climate change is because it's happening to the entire planet. And this happened in the Himalayas, but we have other mountains around the world, whether it be the Andes or the Alps or what have you, where there are glaciers that are melting. And so this could be something that could happen elsewhere. Is that a concern?
It is, in the sense that the same processes do occur in many of the world's mountain ranges. And, from Antarctica to Greenland to the Alps to the Andes to Alaska. And we have seen relatively recent events. For example, in Alaska in August 2025, there was a large landslide called the Tracy Arm Landslide, which is believed that basically a retreating glacier was the glacier ice was holding back the mountain slope. But then as it continued to retreat, the ice was no longer holding back the mountain slope. And that's part of what led to the mountain slope collapsing. And it was also a extremely large landslide that led to a huge tsunami with run-ups of more than 4,000 meters. And it was very lucky there were no small ships in the Tracy Arm at that time. But it's a big hazard in especially in the high latitudes, in high elevation areas, where you have these very delicate balances of temperature and ice and soil and, frozen soil, not frozen soil. And it's just a very, very delicate system. As I mentioned in Nepal, in this particular river valley, it seems like there hasn't been a flood of this scale in more than 5,000 years. And so, and it was also, I think according to the initial reports, I should say, it seems like it may have been the largest amount of mass that we've ever recorded moving in a landslide plus glacial collapse event. It was just seems to have been an enormous amount of energy and mass that fell down in this event. And so it's definitely something that we need to be aware of and concerned about in other mountain ranges. And also thinking about sort of the idea of cascading hazards. You could have a landslide go into a lake that causes a flood, or an earthquake causes a landslide, causes a flood. And high mountain environments are very delicate, and the communities there there's a lot of challenges. And so I think it's very important to continue to understand these types of events and to try to help the communities living in those areas to prepare.
Absolutely. So is there an effort underway, or even like a race, to try to do assessments of where could this happen again? Where are the danger zones?
There are a number of different efforts, both scientifically as well as in terms of disaster preparedness and risk reduction. And so, because it's not just a science question, and also a social science question and a human question of how do you get warnings out, how do you get information to people on how to prepare and what kinds of hazards they should be preparing for. And I think that one thing I always think about is really important in these situations is to work together with local communities in the region, because they're going to know. It's so important if you want to get a warning out to. If you're working with people in that community, they're going to know what messaging and what kinds of information is most important for that community, and what kind of warning. Do they need a cell phone warning, or do they need a siren? Things like that. And so to me, it's very important to work with the communities that are impacted in those regions. And also, you asked about sort of globally. I think there's initiatives across the world's mountain ranges right now in terms of understanding the science better, monitoring changes. Some of that you can do with satellite data, which we have a lot more satellite data today than in the past, of course. And you can document changes using the satellite data, but it also requires measurements on the ground. And so I'm familiar with a number of different science projects going out, putting sensors you know, I'm a geophysicist.
GPS instruments that could do minor shifts could be, it just takes a little bit of a shift and suddenly everything starts to collapse.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. GPS is great. I mentioned seismic instruments earlier. You can see seismic signals associated with floods, and that's an active area of research to see if we can use those seismic signals to provide early warning as a different type of sensor that's not in the river, like the water level sensors.
And even the acoustic monitors. I mean, these mm-hmm. things make sounds.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you hear sort of this rumble from the river, and that the rumble goes into the ground, and you can record that with a seismometer, just like you would record an earthquake. You can also record the sound traveling through the air.
But you when you watch the video and you see the enormous amounts of water and ice and debris and rock, there's no infrastructure that could ever be constructed in order to hold something like that back. All you can do is just get people out of the way as fast as possible. And training has to be part of that as well. So when people hear the sirens, they know what it means. So
exactly.
I mean, it's got to be a really coordinated effort in order to try to prepare these types. Because this is something that you think this will happen again? Do you think you'll see something like this again in your lifetime?
I hope not, but yeah. I have to, you know, I suspect, that, I mean, you know, like anytime something like this happens, of course, you hope that it's not going to happen again, but I suspect with the, you know, kind of the delicate balance in the mountains, the trend of warming, the rate of glacial retreat, glacial melting. So you have a lot, more this meltwater that's entering the system and creating lakes. All of that is, I think, of high concern for this type of thing happening again. And maybe, you know, it may not be 5,000 years, you know, until the next one this time.
We just had the one in Alaska. Now this one. Let me go to Justin on the phones. We get this caller in. Justin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is for the scientists there. And I know this show is kind of leaning towards, you know, climate change and glaciers are receding and that's all due to climate change. But climate change, our glaciers are actually still forming. Mount St. Helens still has an active glacier that is still forming and growing. And all those glaciers were blown off in 1980 when it erupted. So I was kind of wondering how that's possible with climate change.
All right, Justin, thank you for that. What do you think about Mount St. Helens and what's going on there?
Yeah, so Mount St. Helens is actually the only glacier in the continental U.S. that is growing. And the reason for that is because of the crater, the shape of the crater, the way, and it has an area of high snowfall. And like you mentioned, the glaciers were destroyed during the volcanic eruption. And so it's sort of been reforming based on the high snow rate in that area and the shape, kind of rugged shape of the crater that was affected in the last eruption. But it's the only one that's growing in the continental U.S. Every other one is retreating, and many of them are retreating, you know, quite rapidly and, are already gone. So it's important to look at each situation. I think the Mount St. Helens is a really interesting glacier, but sort of the overall trend is every other glacier in the continental U.S., as far as I'm aware, is retreating or is.
It was starting from zero. So yeah, you know, that's a different kind of a deal, as opposed to glaciers that have been there for thousands of years.
That's right. There may have been a little bit left after the volcanic eruption. I'm not sure if it went totally to zero, but it's a different situation because it was impacted recently by the volcanic eruption.
So what do you think the central lesson of this Nepal disaster is? I've got about 40 seconds.
So I think the central lesson is the importance of community preparedness for high mountain communities and, you know, working with local people in the area to try to better understand the hazards and to try to basically build the resilience of those communities in any way that we can, you know, and that may require investment of, you know, time, science, resources, but I think it's very important as the vulnerability of those communities sort of underscored by this recent event.
Marianne Karplus is a professor of Earth, Environmental, and Resource Sciences at the University of Texas at El Paso. She's been conducting research on glaciers and high mountain hazards in the Himalayas for about 20 years. Thank you so much for this great information, Marianne. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much, David. Have a good day.
You too. And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.